Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Brought to you by BAE Systems. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening to On DOD this week. I'm Jared Serbu. Glad you're with us. And on this week's program, a focus on electronic warfare in the U.S. Army, including how the Army developed a more formalized and refined capacity for conducting warfare through the electromagnetic spectrum during the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and how EW, as it's called, interrelates, or doesn't, with military cyberspace operations. As we'll hear during this hour, the Army is asking itself exactly that last question. It's currently considering the creation of a cyber center of excellence, which, among other functions, could help integrate the training and doctrine of the Army's nascent cyber force with its more established electronic warfare force. Our guest for the full hour this week is Colonel Jim Ekvall. He's the chief of the Electronic Warfare Division at Army Headquarters. We talked in his offices at the Pentagon, starting with a quick primer on what electronic warfare is and is not.
Electronic warfare really is anything that you do in the electromagnetic spectrum, but also that would include directed energy that would serve to gain and maintain an advantage in the electromagnetic spectrum or to attack facilities as you would with directed energy. So it's a little bit of it's got kind of two pieces to it. And primarily, we're more concerned about using electronic warfare at this point to provide the maneuver commander with what he needs to gain an advantage in the spectrum, more so than we are for the directed energy pieces of it. But I like to mention directed energy because that is a part of electronic warfare as well. And over time, that may well develop. Now, you talked about cyberspace. So from the Army's perspective, we see electronic warfare, cyberspace operations, as not one and the same thing. And there are people out there who believe that cyberspace and electronic warfare are the same thing. So really, if you look at cyberspace operations, cyberspace is a interconnected group of processors and computers and hardware that we typically use as we do things across the Internet, so to speak. Mm-hmm. The electromagnetic spectrum really deals more with the waves that are out there that we communicate on via radio. So that whole line of spectrum that goes from zero to infinity and is broken into visible light and invisible rays and so on. But they are linked to one another. Mm-hmm. So although the Army doesn't see cyberspace and electronic warfare as the same, there's a realization in the Army that they are, what I like to say, inextricably linked to one another. And then added to that equation is really electromagnetic spectrum management operations. And what I mean by that is so that we can communicate without causing undue, really, electronic fratricide. So I want to be able to communicate without, say, messing up one of my GPS systems. A very simplistic example. But that's really electromagnetic spectrum operations. How do we divide the spectrum up so that we can use it to our advantage without inadvertently causing some sorts of interference? So if you take those three things, electronic warfare, which consists of various parts and pieces, cyberspace operations, which consist of various parts and pieces, and electromagnetic spectrum management operations, collectively, the Army refers to that as cyber electromagnetic activities, which we call CEMA, C-E-M-A. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how the Army views it. They're not the same, but they all are interrelated to one another. So as an example, this is a fairly simplistic example, but it kind of drives the point home a little bit. If I want to communicate using the Internet, or I want to communicate using cyberspace, so I may want to tell a satellite to do something or whatever the case may be. So as I use my computer systems and my cyberspace assets to do that, oftentimes there's some sort of radio frequency aperture, because as you well know, as I communicate from, say, the Army in Korea to the United States, somewhere along the way, those signals are going to get turned into radio frequency. before it goes back into cyberspace to basically complete my email chain, for lack of a better word. So there's kind of a simplistic example of how cyberspace and electronic warfare, in this case, would be to prevent the enemy from keeping us from communicating that way. So that would be how we would do, say, defensive electronic attack, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. That's how they're interrelated with one another.
Sure. To take that a step further, I mean, there's got to be a day in the near future where just about literally every communication that happens in the world is ones and zeros moving through cyberspace. If we're not already there, we're probably pretty close to that. That being the case, does it still make sense to have a differentiation between something called electronic warfare and cyberspace operations? Take me a little bit more into why we need to draw those distinctions.
Yeah, I think that at some point those ones and zeros are going to get converted to a radio frequency in most instances. It's prohibitively expensive to have interconnected cabling from one end of the planet to the other. So what we do is you type your internet message, it goes to some relay tower, it might go up to a satellite, and then it shoots down to some other tower, which eventually creates an email on the other side of the planet. It's relatively well-developed technology, we know how it works, but not only that, it's certainly a lot less expensive than trying to hardwire those two computer systems together. So at this point, I don't see a time in the near future where you won't need radio frequencies in order to make your cyberspace operations successful. And in order to do that, you're going to have to provide, at least from an Army perspective, you've got to give the commander on the ground the ability to maneuver inside of that electromagnetic spectrum with freedom and at the same time prevent the enemy from doing so. Because if he doesn't dominate that spectrum, if he doesn't win that fight in the spectrum, then he may not be able to communicate through cyberspace.
Mm-hmm. So tell me if I've got this wrong, but this concept called SEMA is everybody and everything that operates within the electromagnetic spectrum, you know, DC to daylight, plus cyber. And then within that, you've got these separate constructs called cyber and called electronic warfare that still need to maintain their individual character. Is SEMA a relatively new concept for the Army? Is this the construct you're using to try to converge these areas where they make sense?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So SEMA, Cyber Electromagnetic Activities, as a doctrine, is soon to be published. So it has gone through staffing. It has gone through action officers ensuring that it makes sense from a perspective that it doesn't interfere with other doctrine that's out there. And that doctrine is soon to be published by the Army's Training and Doctrine Command. And it will be forthcoming. I anticipate that it will be forthcoming sometime in November. But, you know, they've got a schedule there that they'll adhere to get it published. But sometime relatively soon, that doctrine will be out. And so what we'll see is this this doctrine of SEMA really does begin to show our leaders in the Army and our battlefield commanders just exactly what the link up is between electronic warfare, cyberspace operations, and electromagnetic spectrum operations. Because before, if you viewed them separately, then that was the wrong way to view it. So this doctrine, in many ways, will kind of show our commanders and our leaders how the Army envisions the symbiotic relationship, if you will, between electronic warfare and cyberspace operations.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how much more detail you can give on that since it's obviously pre-decisional at this point, but can you give us some sense of where you think the seams between those three areas are going to remain and where there will be areas of convergence?
Okay, so I guess probably the best way to describe that is as you just said, there will be seams between these. If they're not one and the same and then they're kind of linked to one another, there's a seam there. And how do you prevent that seam from causing a problem? Okay. And so what the Army is looking at doing at some point is having a cyber workforce. At this point, what that cyber workforce is going to consist of is up for some analysis, and I don't know exactly where that will go. But in order to integrate and synchronize the three pieces that I just described in SEMA, the Army has already identified, at least in the early part of it, that it will be done by our electronic warfare professionals in the Army. So the officers and the warrant officers and the enlisted soldiers who coordinate and synchronize electronic warfare will also have the responsibility to coordinate and synchronize all SEMA operations for the maneuver commander.
Hmm. So the EW workforce, in a sense, becomes the cyber workforce of the future. Do I have that wrong?
Well, it doesn't become. The Army will make a decision on what the cyber workforce will consist of. So right now, the Army doesn't have a military occupational specialty specifically identified to do cyberspace operations. At some point, they very well may be. Now, that doesn't mean that soldiers in the Army aren't doing things in cyberspace, because they are. But it's a mix of various military occupational specialties, various branches in the service, as opposed to just one. The Army will continue to look at this and determine who will do the cyberspace part of SEMA. Will it be what we're doing nowadays, several MOSs coordinated by at least the 29s at this point, or will it be a separate workforce? If there is a separate workforce, you already have a separate workforce that does electronic warfare. You already have a separate workforce that does spectrum management operations. So how do you tie it all together? Who does the synchronization? At least at this point, it'll be those 29s.
Makes sense.
In the future, you know, who knows what the future will hold. But I will tell you right now that Fort Sill, Oklahoma, that has the responsibility to train the Army's EW workforce, is already bringing cyberspace operations into the instruction there so that those graduates will understand what their role is to synchronize all parts of SEMA, not to just do electronic warfare.
And I think one of the main areas that, or one of the main venues that the Army is looking to do some of the synchronization is the Cyber Center of Excellence. I think right. We're still waiting on a final decision on that from Secretary McHugh. Correct me if I'm wrong.
As I understand it, that's exactly where we are. TRADOC, the Army's Training and Doctrine Command, formulated a recommendation to the Chief of Staff of the Army for the formation of a Cyber Center of Excellence. The Chief of Staff of the Army concurred with that recommendation, but did not decide whether or not it was going to actually happen, because that is a decision for, as you just mentioned, the Secretary of the Army. And the location of that is also up for this decision by the Secretary of the Army. So at this point, I can't tell you that there will be a Cyber Center of Excellence, not because I'm being dismissive, because I don't make that decision, and I don't know what that decision will ultimately be. So you're exactly right.
Colonel Jim Ekvall is the chief of the Army's Electronic Warfare Division. We'll come back and hear his ideas on what the role of electronic warfare might be in that proposed Cyber Center of Excellence after our first break. This is On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin. Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com, I'm Jared Serbu. Thanks for tuning in this week as we return to our conversation with Army Colonel Jim Ekvall, chief of that service's Electronic Warfare Division. As we heard before the break, the Army's currently considering the creation of a Cyber Center of Excellence, one center of gravity for training and doctrine on cyberspace operations and potentially electronic warfare as well. As Ekvall told us earlier, he sees those two fields as interrelated, but still distinct from one another.
As envisioned, can you say anything about how you see the electronic warfare community playing in that center, and broadly what the whole idea of the construct would be?
Well, okay, great question. So at this point, if the decision is made to indeed have a cyber center of excellence, I think one of the things the Army will determine is, well, what has to be done at that cyber center of excellence so that we can execute successful cyberspace operations. And that will be their priority effort initially. Given our doctrine, as I've previously described it, at some point, electronic warfare has to be brought into the mix at the cyber center of excellence. EW already has a school and already has a proponent office, and for several years now they've been doing the training of the soldiers and the doctrine development and the material development and so on. And so at this point, that's on a fairly good path. So what I think will happen eventually, assuming that there is a cyber center of excellence, is first they'll determine, well, what does it mean to be a cyber center of excellence with the focus on what is the cyber piece of that? And then later on, you will see brought into that the remaining pieces of SEMA. And so at some point, this cyber center of excellence would probably have ultimate oversight for the Army of all things SEMA. That's ECFAL's opinion only. Don't know that that's how it will turn out or necessarily that that's everyone's thinking.
Gotcha. From your perspective, again, from Colonel Ekvall's point of view, does this close any gaps that the Army has in terms of its current ability to integrate all these things?
Having a cyber center of excellence?
Yes.
Well, you know, certainly gaps will be identified through the process, and someone has a responsibility to ensure those gaps are addressed and closed. I think having a cyber center of excellence, if that is the decision, will go a long way in identifying those gaps and then eventually closing those gaps. So I couldn't see that it would be counterproductive to the process.
Mm. You talked a little bit about the electronic warfare workforce earlier, but let's get a little bit more into that. Who are these operators and what do they do?
Great. So there's actually three different military occupational specialties, so to speak, for electronic warfare. For commissioned officers, there's a functional area, which we refer to as 29 Alpha. And 29 Alphas are captains and above. So we don't bring second lieutenants in to be this. It's someone who's already come into the Army, who's already been to his basic course, has already done his first tour of duty, and who has a desire to specialize in what we call a functional area. That functional area, being electronic warfare, that officer does synchronization of SEMA activities, or SEMA, for the maneuver commander at different levels. So brigades, divisions, corps, Army Service Component Command headquarters. And that's what they do. We also have warrant officers who assist in that process, and that is called it's actually a branch for the warrant officers. It's an EW branch. Now, warrant officers can come into that branch as W-1s, which is the juniorest of warrant officers. And then the last military occupational specialty is for 29 ECHOs. And those are the enlisted soldiers who we also do in-service recruiting for non-commissioned officers at the grade of E5 and above. And again, they would be throughout the force from the battalions all the way up to the ASCC headquarters. And those collectively we refer to as the 29 series. And they do, as I've already described, they do electronic warfare planning and synchronization for the maneuver commander so that the maneuver commander can ultimately gain and maintain an advantage in the electromagnetic spectrum.
Hmm. In terms of the qualities of the workforce that you have, especially with regard to those warrants, are there particular skill sets or abilities that you look for in candidates that would be good EW operators?
You know, the primary qualification for being a electronic warfare officer, non-commissioned officer, or warrant officer is a desire to do it. What would keep you from being able to do it would be if you could not have the requisite security credentials. So you must have a secret clearance for some, TSSCI for others, but you got to have the requisite security clearances. There's no skill, really, that you're going to learn as a field artilleryman or an infantryman or as a pilot or anybody else that's going to really make you an electronic warfare officer, a better candidate. As long as you can meet the requirements from a security perspective, go to the courses and learn the material, and then you have a desire to go off into the Army and do that kind of work, that's really what it comes down to.
Mm. So let's talk some more about what the electronic warfare community actually does, especially over this last period of Iraq and Afghanistan. Talk about what our capabilities were like at the front end of that and how they've matured and evolved to the point where we are today.
Well, the realities are when we first got into Iraq and Afghanistan, there was no Army EW specialty at all. So what had happened was the electronic warfare that we did do in the Army, much is the same way as I described it just a moment ago with cyber being done by a collection of various military occupational specialties. Electronic warfare was very much the same way. You had some signal officers and career fields that were doing some aspects of electronic warfare. You had some parts of the intel community that were doing some aspects of electronic warfare. And you really had parts of the fire support community that was doing some aspects of electronic warfare. But collectively, there was no professionals who really were dedicated to doing that particular job. Nor were there positions in the Army for anyone to do that job. So the Army took a look at gaps, determined that there was a personnel gap, or there was a personnel solution required to close some of the gaps, is really how I should say it. Mm-hmm. And what was born of that was those MOSs and career fields that I just described to you a moment ago. And so prior to that, you either had a collection of individuals in the service doing it, but we also relied relatively heavily on the expertise of the joint community. So what you would find is in Army formations, you would find both Navy personnel and Air Force personnel who were assisting maneuver commanders at various levels to plan and synchronize electronic warfare because the Army just didn't possess the skills.
Did the Army have those skills before and they kind of atrophied while the Navy and Air Force kept them?
There has always been some sort of EW capability in the Army, as I just described. Mm-hmm. But I don't recall any time in the Army where there was an EW specialty. So that's relatively new for the Army to do. Now, when you talk about the atrophy of electronic warfare, there was a time when the Army had material solutions that could do a certain measure of electronic attack. And what I mean by that is they could actually find a signal and then attack that signal and therefore prevent the enemy from using that part of the spectrum for his advantage. Over time, those material solutions basically came out of the inventory. So we had fewer and fewer and fewer of those types of things, and we relied more heavily on the joint force to provide those types of assets to us. What we found out in the current conflict is that what the joint force could bring to the fight, although it is absolutely the best in the world at doing what it was designed to do, it wasn't designed to support ground maneuver commanders in close contact. Therefore, it often was problematic. It didn't stay very long. It was often fratricidal to our own Blue Force communications. And so the Army said, we've got to look at this as a holistic problem. What are all of the dot mil PF equities related to electronic warfare? And what came from that was doctrine, personnel, facilities to train soldiers, leader development, and also material solutions that the Army is beginning to develop so that we can provide commanders not only the personnel and the doctrine and the facilities to train people, but also those material solutions that will give him an ability that he has as an organic part of his formation.
That's Colonel Jim Ekvall, the Chief of the Army's Electronic Warfare Division. We'll come back and talk more after another short break. This is On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin. Welcome back to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Jared Serbu. Our show this week is focused on electronic warfare in the U.S. Army. And as we heard earlier from our guest, Jim Ekvall, the chief of the Army's Electronic Warfare Division, the Army did not have a formal force of electronic warriors prior to the start of the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. But they came to play a key role in blocking enemy communications without jamming friendly signals.
So I imagine a lot of this was born out of necessity, as you started seeing, for example, a lot of IED issues in Iraq and Afghanistan, sure. Predominantly Iraq in the early days. What role did EW play in those two theaters?
Well, as I said, early on, it was primarily the responsibility of the joint force to provide that, and it began to cause problems. And so we continued to rely on those material solutions that were available. So the Navy had some counter-radio-controlled IED capability, various iterations of that that would actually, you could, power it up and provide an antenna to it, and then it could prevent an IED, a radio-controlled IED, from exploding. It doesn't have much effect on a pressure plate, but it would certainly prevent an IED from exploding that was controlled by a radio. But again, those things happen to many times be fratricidal. And so over time, what has happened is we've improved and continued to improve upon that, and we've gotten past many of those issues now where we are today. So what we see is a reduction, almost an elimination, of the enemy's use of radio-controlled IEDs. They still use other types of IEDs. At this point, we're continuing to develop material solutions to go after a lot more than just radio-controlled IEDs, because electronic warfare is much, much more than just keeping a radio-controlled IED from functioning.
Mm-hmm. Are there other particular areas that are beyond the IED defeat function that EW plays that you would particularly point out in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Yeah, what we want to do is deny the enemy the ability to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Using whatever types of radios that he can come by. And there, the proliferation of technology is such that I can get some fairly sophisticated communications capability even if I'm a relatively poor insurgency. It's out there. You can purchase it from, there are many countries willing to sell it to you. And unfortunately, you can buy some of it right off the internet. So the ability of the enemy to communicate and organize his attacks and get his overwatch position set, or to tell a insurgent to move forward towards an attack, or whatever the case may be, really is the focus of EW of the future. We want to deny the enemy an ability to communicate at all. I don't want him to be able to communicate via the cell phones. I don't want him to be able to communicate using the radios. I don't want him to be able to communicate using any means at all where he would have to have access to the spectrum to do so. I also want to look at targets that are much greater than anything that an insurgency would ever bring. So as an example, if an enemy has the ability to bring a UAV, an unmanned aerial vehicle, to the battlefield, say to conduct surveillance, I want to deny him the parts of the spectrum that would allow him to have that UAV do his work for him. Maybe I want to cause that thing to veer off course or crash or just lose contact and he can't get any information from it. If the enemy is so sophisticated that he has the ability to use, say, a proximity fuse on the battlefield. So that's basically a fused projectile that senses how close it is to the ground using radio frequency. And so the projectile would say, hey, I'm 12 meters above the ground. I'm going to detonate now because it's much more effective that way. I want to prevent the enemy from being able to use that part of the spectrum that causes that proximity fuse to function so that it hits the ground without functioning. Or maybe I catch it on its upward leg of the projectile and I cause it to function well before it gets to the target. Maybe if the enemy has access to his own GPS systems, I want to deny him the ability to navigate using precision-guided systems or even just map guidance. Like your standard GPS, maybe I want to prevent him from doing that. I don't want to prevent myself from doing it. So that's kind of how we provide the commander the ability to use his systems, as I just described. But at the same time, we deny the enemy to do that. So EW is much more than attacking an RCID. I want to stop comms and anything else that the enemy uses in the spectrum.
Back to the material solutions that you brought to the battlefield over the Afghanistan period, my impression is that a lot of military capability that was developed over that time came through OWNS and JUONS, and then the focus was on meeting urgent needs, not necessarily on integration and interoperability. Has that been the case in your world of work, too, and are you trying to move past that now?
It has been, and we are moving past it. So as you just described, the urgent need of commanders. When a commander downrange says he needs something, he needs it urgently, all services, the Army included, do what they can to provide him the material solutions that he needs.
Sure.
And so oftentimes, especially early in the war, as we developed capability to meet his urgent need, what we'll say sometimes is we threw it over the fence. So we got it working. We made sure that there were the risks associated with the deployment of that system were within the acceptable level of risk. And then we provided that to commander. So we didn't integrate these things necessarily. So one system we deployed 2 years ago may actually cause a problem with another system that we deployed this year.
Right.
And so we did everything we could to eliminate those types of interference problems as we deployed newer pieces of equipment to the field. But as we move forward with a material solution, the integration of those systems and to ensure that they are able to be compatible with and interoperable with all the other systems out there is paramount to the fielding. So in the future, as we field an IEWS, an Integrated Electronic Warfare System, it will truly be integrated. So the I in Integrated Electronic Warfare System is a very important I. It will be integrated. It will not cause the same types of issues. So, yes, we're moving beyond those initial issues we had.
And when that IEWS is fielded, can you give me a sense of what a commander will actually see, vice what he has available to him right
okay.
now?
So what we have primarily given our commanders at this point to do electronic warfare downrange is really what we call a series of quick reaction capabilities, as you just described, QRCs. And that commander right now has limited ability to do – he can certainly do counter-radio controlled IED. Okay, so that works very well. There's some ability for the commanders to do some comms attack. There's the ability for commanders to do direction finding. So these types of things exist today. But they, as I mentioned earlier, they weren't necessarily integrated with one another, and you can't necessarily control them all from, say, a central workstation. So one of the first things we want to do in this integrated electronic warfare system is to provide to those electronic warfare officers that I just described something that we call the EW Planning and Management Tool. So it's a software suite. So it's not we're not bringing in a new computer system or new servers or a new array of boxes to make this electronic warfare planning and management tool work. It's a software solution. But this software solution will enable the electronic warfare officer to get a sense for what the battlefield looks like. He'll be able to pull from the various intel sources that exist out there a collection of intelligence data that will say this is what the electromagnetic environment looks like in the battlefield today. All of the tools that are available to me at this same point in time allow me to do these types of things in the spectrum. So now he can plan what he can do. He can manage assets accordingly, and then he can bring that to the commander and show him what the electromagnetic environment looks like. He can show him the effects that he will have with the tools that are available to him, no matter where those tools necessarily come from, because we'll be able to pull the data about a particular tool. So as an extreme example, if we were doing operations with a coalition, and say one of our coalition partners brought a piece of electronic warfare kit that we're not used to, well, as long as they're willing to share the data associated with that, then that can be pulled into this electronic warfare system. And then the EWO, whether he's an officer or a warrant officer or an enlisted soldier, will be able to show the maneuver commander really how that maneuver commander can gain an advantage in the spectrum and at the same time deny the enemy. So part of this is to have a planning and management tool, very important aspect of all this, because we've not given that to our electronic warfare officers at this time. Now, that only gets at planning and management. That system, as I just described it, by itself will not produce an effect on the battlefield. So you've got to have the ability to And I'll use kind of the example I was talking about earlier. I want to attack communications. So I want to put systems on the battlefield that I can use to attack communications or keep a proximity fuse from functioning or interfere with the GPS or cause a problem with a UAV or maybe even cause it to crash, whatever the case may be, or deny the enemy the ability to get his feed from his UAV, those types of things. We've got to provide him with those electronic attack capabilities in an integrated fashion that provides the commander what he needs. And so that's another integral part of this IEWS, and it's an offensive electronic attack capability that will reside in this. And it will mature over time. So at some point when we first start, it may have a certain capability, probably primarily focused on the attack of enemy communications, GPS denial, UAV attack, those types of things. Later in time, it may actually include the ability to conduct directed energy attacks, high power microwave, sometime down the future as we technologically mature some of those capabilities. And then the last part of this integrated electronic warfare system really is defensive electronic attack, which sounds like an oxymoron when you say defensive electronic attack. But in reality, that is what our crew devices do today. So in simple terms, a crew device senses the environment. It knows what the threat is in the environment. As soon as it identifies that threat, it attacks it. So it is what we call a defensive electronic attack. In the future, we're going to have to replace what we have now, our crew systems, which we refer to in the Army as Dukes. That system is beginning to get some age on it. Technology, as you well know, advances very, very quickly. Some of what we have now will become obsolete. And at some point in the future, when it reaches that threshold for obsolescence, we're going to have to put another system into the field. And so that is the defensive electronic attack. So IEWS as a whole consists of those three relatively large pieces. EWPMT, planning and management tool. The multifunction electronic warfare, which is really focused on offensive electronic attack, which will have a ground fixed site capability, an aerial capability, a dismounted capability, and a mounted capability. And then that defensive electronic attack piece. Collectively, that is IEWS.
Colonel Jim Ekvall is the chief of the Army's Electronic Warfare Division. He's our guest for the full hour this week. We'll come back and hear a few final thoughts on the future of electronic warfare in the Army. This is on DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbian. Welcome back to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Jared Serbu. Let's get back now to our conversation with Army Colonel Jim Ekvall. He's the chief of the Army's Electronic Warfare Division, our guest for the full hour this week.
Only got a few minutes left here, and I want to spend it with a little bit more talk about the future.
Okay.
You got into this a little bit earlier, but with regard to the environment that you're going to operate in, you know, I've had this idea in my head that in our two wars in CENTCOM, we've basically had complete dominance of the electromagnetic spectrum. Based on what you've already said, that's probably an exaggeration. But looking to, for example, the Asia-Pacific, how much more complicated and challenging does that spectrum environment get for you? How do you have to think differently about how you operate?
So the need to have an advantage in the spectrum exists no matter what level of warfare you're fighting, whether it's an insurgency or a full conflict, a major military operation. You've got to have spectrum dominance. But what the enemy brings to the battlefield, the more sophisticated it is, the more difficult it's going to be to gain in that advantage in the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So we, the Army, the Air Force, the Marines, the Navy, all have to have the technological edge. So they've got to have the ability to do the correct amount of research and development so that we can stay ahead of the enemy. So whether we're working in the Asia-Pacific area or somewhere in a jungle in a low-intensity conflict, the need to have the advantage in the spectrum really doesn't change. The difficulties of doing that will change, and that's a technological challenge that our research and development community has got to stay ahead of. we've got to build systems that can be adapted to changing situations. I don't want to build a system that is only good for an insurgency, because I don't have the money to say, well, rip all that out because we're not fighting an insurgency. We've got to have a system that has the ability to be expandable, adaptable, and scalable, so that we can use it in every type of situation.
Colonel Iqbal, it's been a really interesting hour. Thanks so much for talking with us today.
I can't believe it's been an hour, but I really appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation with you. So thank you for your time.
You bet. Thank you.
That is Colonel Jim Iqbal, the Chief of the Army's Electronic Warfare Division. He was with us for the full hour this week as we discussed the pending and proposed Army Cyber Center of Excellence, the history of electronic warfare in the Army over the past dozen years, and many other interrelated topics. If you missed any of our program, you can listen to it online anytime at federalnewsradio.com. And also a reminder, we recently changed our program schedule for this show, so you can now hear it every week, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and Mondays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, right after the Federal Drive, on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., and federalnewsradio.com. That's going to do it for this week's edition of On DoD. Very glad you could join us. Please tune in again next week. I'm Jared Serbu. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu, brought to you by BAE Systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.